Straight Talk with Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hey, everybody. We're back.
We're back.
After many weeks of vacations, conferences, and everything else that pops up. Tonight, I guess I'm in the control seat, which is unusual. Scott, the producer, Scott, is here. And Sabrina's here.
Hello.
And Marty's out there helping a customer right now. So as soon as she comes back, because we are live from the Ghost Hunter store. But I don't want to eat up too much time talking because our guest is going to do most of the talking tonight, I'm sure. The author of A Near-Death Experience, I Died and Came Back from Hell, Grady Mosby. Hi, Grady. How you doing?
I am doing great. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm real glad to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
You made a hell of an impression, I think, on all of us at Phenomenology, listening to your presentation and reading your book.
I was there.
So we wanted to make sure we can get you to reach out to as many people as possible that can hear your message. All right. You still there, Grady?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if we're having connection problems again, which doesn't surprise me. So if you want to jump right in, I mean, tell us a little bit. I mean, it's easier for you to go right through your story, I think, than us ask questions. And we'll just jump in and as we have them.
That sounds beautiful. Well, for those of you that haven't read my book, based on my stories, like a lot of people's stories, however, during my life, I've had multiple interventions, angelic interventions that have either saved my life or helped me to not take my life, at least angelic interventions that I was aware of. I personally believe that they're happening all the time around all of us. A lot of times we don't know how much the angels are involved in saving us from different events, whether it be from having a car wreck or, you know, taking a wrong turn and or making the wrong decision by that little voice inside of you that tells you, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do this or should do that. So anyways, when my parents got together, they had kind of a torrid relationship to start, but they had created four beautiful children. I included myself in that mix. I had a brother a year older, and I was one of twins, my twin brother, although he's been my angel for a long time. He died at 8 months of pneumonia, I didn't realize that it really affected my life in regards to creating a void in my life until many years later when I started dealing with my feelings and talking about them. Then had another brother a year younger that we kind of just all came out together. And, you know, life went on. My dad ended up and wasn't the most model citizen and ended up getting in some trouble. My mom was a school teacher, so my brothers and I all had good study habits. One day, she came home from school. I was in the fourth grade, and she sat us all down, sitting on the top of us, and she proceeded to tell us that Dad wasn't coming home. He'd gotten in trouble, was going to prison, and they were getting a divorce. Well, we idolized my dad. He wasn't around a whole lot, but when he was around, it was all fun and games. And he taught us to play sports, which we were good at. And I cried for hours. I felt like it was my fault they were getting a divorce. I didn't understand divorce. I didn't understand what was going on. And then, you know, back then we only had, you know, three channels of TV, the newspaper, and everybody read it. We had school and we had church. And, of course, my mom told us that someone, kids might start making fun of us because of what happened. And sure enough, that happened at least with my people I knew. And I started getting angry. Right. So I kind of kept that anger with me for a long time. And, you know, it created a different things in my life. And as I moved on, my mom did better than most families that had two parents, mom and dad. She was both. My brothers and I, again, excelled in school and excelled in sports. And then when, I was in eighth grade, and again, my mom, great mom. However, back then we didn't talk about a lot of our problems when we had them. You know, when something would happen, mom would just say, it'll be okay, like good parents do. It'll be okay. You'll get over it. It'll be better next time. However, we didn't talk about how it was going to be better. So I was always searching for something, wanting to be part of the group. And remember after basketball practice when I was in eighth grade, cheerleader, long-haired, the scholastic group, heard him talking about going to smoke. know, the smoke in the tree. The trees were a bunch of trees outside our practice field. And I said, hey, I'll come along. Well, as an athlete, I didn't want to smoke. I didn't have any desire to smoke, but I just wanted to be part of their group. So like most of the people out there listening, if you have children, part of the reason I wrote this book is so that parents would understand that even if your kids are going to church and they're getting great grades, which I got straight A's, they're doing great in sports, that peer pressure thing's out there.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, I'm sorry, yes. I'm just going to jump in whenever.
Yes.
Whenever Dave wants to.
Yeah, but that's one of the points you made that struck home with me, thinking, you know, I'm 46 now. You tend to forget the peer pressure and what it was like when you were younger. It's like, I think when you become like a parent, I guess, you forget what it was like, and you assume your kids aren't going to go through that. You know,
that's,
I think,
exactly,
it's a little,
right,
you know, being naive,
no,
but it seems like every generation, yeah, I think every generation thinks they're going to be ready, but they don't really know, right. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, go ahead. Continue,
yeah,
please.
Thank you for mentioning that, because we all feel like we're immune to it because we teach our kids the right things, and I was brought up right. However, I wanted to go be part of the group, and so we got to the trees, and the longer guy pulled out a funny-looking cigarette. I said, what's that? And he said, Mary Jane. Mm. I said, well, he's in marijuana. So I was there, so I went ahead and took a hit of it, coughed, they catheterized me, told me to hold it in, and I held it in the next time, and I got high the first time that I smoked pot. Some people say they don't.
Yeah, I didn't.
However, it was the first time that I'd used drugs or alcohol to fill my void, to fill that emptiness I had inside. I was a good kid, raised right. So shortly thereafter that, of course, you know, in that 7th, 8th grade, I don't know how early they do it now, we're making out a lot, and got a girlfriend, and then found out that that was fulfilling in regards to someone loving you and making you feel wanted, and then sex came about, and started experimenting with sex to fill my emptiness. Well, 8th grade was over, and I was one of the quarterback candidates going into the high school, and I was real excited about high school and practicing so hard and so long is so important. And first day of school, we'd been practicing for 2 weeks, went out to practice, and we were doing a tackling blocking drill. It was called Oklahoma. For people out there who don't know about sports, basically, there's a running back, an offensive lineman, they get together, and then there's the defensive lineman, a linebacker, who was me at the time. And they decide which way they're going to come through the line, and the guy blocks on the offensive guy, blocks on the defensive guy, and the running back runs through, and I stick him, pick him up, and start driving him backwards, practicing good form. And these two big linemen then decide to jump on the party. And with my momentum forward, my right cleat was right way behind my head as I was running. Instead of pushing this back, he pushed it straight down and broke my femur right in half.
Ouch.
I didn't say finger, I said femur. That's a thigh bone.
Wow.
Snapped it right in half, and as I looked to the right, anguished in pain, I could see my knee and my thigh perpendicular to my head, my right foot way behind my neck, and my leg was just flopping there, broken half.
Excellent.
So, you know, I got to listen to the ambulance guys all the way to the hospital talk about I'd never play football again, and I was really getting mad. I was pissed off. So now, again, why practice hard on something that doesn't make any sense? You're going to be disappointed. And so I decided I didn't get out of high school early. I had a role model. It was my dad's brother, who was an engineer, and I was good in school, so I started taking classes earlier to get out early. And then right before my senior year, met a gal, and we got pregnant. So the timing was a little off, granted, getting ready to go to college. However, I was excited about it. I wanted to be a good dad. You know, my parents got divorced. I never wanted to be divorced. And went off to college, got straight A's, came back, and then we moved up to campus together. And you have to read the book to see what all happened there. But one thing leads to another, and we get a divorce. All right, so now I don't trust women anymore. Love women, but I don't trust them. So it's all about sex, satisfying my own desires, not wanting to commit to anything. However, I continued school, got good grades, and graduated, and I got my dream job. Well, you know, we experimented with drugs, you know, marijuana, you know, a little cocaine, a little speed in high school. In college, didn't do a lot, just drank a lot. However, now that I graduated, I was an engineer, and I had money, and started partying. Going out late at night to the dance clubs and staying up late, getting up early and not performing good at work. And then I lost my dream job.
Ugh.
So now he was like all, you know, all cuffs were off. And I was pissed off at the world, and so my drug use accelerated. And we're going to talk a lot about drugs here in this whole story, so I don't want the audience to let that take away from the message in the story.
There's a very good message here.
I really don't, because there has to be some drug talk about what happened to create the experiences we're getting ready to talk about. However, it can happen to your kids if you don't talk about things that happen. Mm-hmm. If they have a problem with a sporting event, change to a different sport. If they have a problem with a musical instrument that they're not liking anymore, switch to another one. If something happens here, try and find something else to fill it, and just tell them, and be sure you tell them you love them and talk about their feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so hard now with all these electronic devices. I don't know if any is anybody listening tonight. I mean, anybody, Dave, you guys, are you parents now? Are you currently raising kids?
No, Sabrina
I'm
is.
The only one with a child. I'm a 6-year-old.
Okay, 6-year-old. Okay, yes. Very good. Well, you know, they're pretty smart. You know, first 0 to 4, 35% of their characteristics develop, and then they say for the next 8 years, about 60% more of it's developed. Mm. So whatever you guys are talking about and let not be talked about, that really carries on further. But anyways, so, you know, I don't know if anybody's, most people have had some type of addiction in their life, whether it be a family member or strain with a family member. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever watched anybody, whether it be drug addiction, alcohol addiction, gambling, sex, overeating, or whatever, it's a continuous rotating cycle of relapse and terror that, you know, the wake of destruction that occurs to the family, and the families really suffer. That's another reason I wrote the book, so that, you know, addicts and families of any type of addiction over compulsive disorder would know that they can still have hope and to never give up. As you'll see in a few minutes, I got really sick, and I got well. So don't give up. Don't give up. Mm-hmm. So anyways, one thing leads to another, and I'm up and down. And in the recovery business, we call it geographical. And that's where some of y'all have done it, maybe in a relationship status or in a business status where things didn't go well. You lost a job, didn't have a good relationship, and say, well, I'll move to a different place, and then it'll be better. Well, I needed to get out of Bakersfield, California, where I was, and so I called my little brother. He was a construction guy in Texas, Houston, Texas, and my other brother lived there also. And I said, hey, man, I need to get out of here. He said, okay, pack your car and come on out. So I packed my 1976 Buick LeSabre little two-door, and with everything I owned, which fit in that car at the time, and I headed to Houston, Texas. Well, the first day I was there, I stayed with my other brother, Lance, and talked for a little while. And then said, I'm going to go out to the pool. Went out to the pool. Sure enough, there's a good-looking girl out there. We got together. She decided to give me, you know, fix me dinner that night. Oh. We spent the night with each other. Next morning, I knocked on the door early, and I hadn't seen my brother in years, and he looked at me kind of disgusted, and I said, I got to go to work. And so I got my stuff and went over to my brother's office, my other brother's office, and we headed to College Station, which is about 100 miles away from Houston. And the gal was going to be throwing a Memorial Weekend party in 2 weeks at her parents' house. I guess they're pretty well-to-do. She said, it'll be a real good party. Won't we make it your birthday party, too? My birthday was a couple days ago.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
And, of course, during Memorial Weekend, and I said, sure, that sounds fun. So anyways, the 2 weeks passes pretty quickly, and Saturday morning rolls along. I get up early and go hang out at the swimming pool for a while. Then I get packed and get ready, and you know, the Texas roads, I don't know if anybody listening is from Texas or not, but they are curvy, windy, up and down, left and right, double yellow lines you can't pass, mm-hmm. and there's forest on both sides. So I've been driving about 20 minutes, my window rolled down, and the music just blaring and having a great Texas beautiful sky day, and all of a sudden a guy in a Trans Am was roaring up behind me, and he had a radar detector, so he couldn't pass me. So to be courteous, I sped up and also took advantage of the extra speed to get there quicker, highway patrol protection, as I call it. We're up and down, left and right, speed up, slow down, depending on what his radar detector said. And after about 20-25 minutes of this, all of a sudden I heard this, who's your seatbelt on? Huge. Huge boy blows me out. I jump up. I look to the back seat of my car. I thought there was someone in the car with me, and just scared the crap out of me.
That scared
my
me.
Adrenaline was rushing. I looked around, kept looking for somebody in my car, And this voice was so much louder in my whole body, in my bones, in my head, telling me to put my seatbelt on. Well, after I calmed down, I rationalized it. Memorial weekend, people would be driving drunk. My seatbelt was broken. And it'll age some of you out there, but some of you may remember the cars without shoulder belts. This car didn't have a shoulder belt, so I said, I'm putting my seatbelt on somehow. So I hooked over to the passenger side. So my belt was loose, of course. However, I had a seatbelt on, so I felt good. The voice told me to do it, so I was driving on down the road. Next thing, in about 20 minutes, I'm over top of the hill, and there's a flashing yellow at the bottom in my direction, flashing red on the other side. There's a yellow Cadillac sitting on the left. I get about 50 yards from the intersection, and this Cadillac guns it straight across. Well, I had no choice but to slam right into the guy. And right as I T-bone him, I get ejected from my seat. I'm heading toward the windshield. My neck hits the windshield. It breaks. My neck pops, and then this loose seatbelt catches and saves my life. So that was my first knowledge of having an intervention from angels in my life.
See, I've had the seatbelt thing exact. Unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately, there was no accident in my. And I don't know why. I was actually at a fork in the road, and I had that same like booming voice that made like your body
vibrate. Really?
And it told me to put my seatbelt on, but it also told me to take the different road that I would not. Instead of taking the straight path home, it would take me 20 minutes out of my way. But it was such a voice of authority. You know, I didn't hesitate to just do whatever it said.
And oh my gosh, you know exactly what I'm talking about, yeah. Then. Unbelievable.
I don't know what I missed, but apparently I missed something, you know, that I needed to miss. Mm-hmm. You know,
I guarantee it.
And now whenever I hear, sometimes it's the voice isn't that loud, but when I hear that little voice is letting you know.
Or you hear that slow down.
You know, you're slow down or anything like that. It's like, I just listen now. But I know exactly the booming voice you're talking about.
I tell you what, I listen to those little ones too now, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yep.
Well, very good. So, anyway, of course, I was hurt pretty bad the next morning. I couldn't even walk. You know, I had a lot of rehab after that. And then, you know, went on about my life. Kind of, everything's kind of even killed for a while. And well, I ended up back in Bakersfield, California, trying to get back in the oil business. And, you know, I started partying again. I was living with a gal and her mother in an apartment. And again, here's some more discussion about the drugs, and I try and keep it, you know, low key. But the three ways to use cocaine, I was using cocaine at the time, my drug of choice, and alcohol and whatever else. Mm. You can smoke it, you can snort it, or you can shoot it in your vein. Smoking it and putting it in your vein are very deadly. When you smoke it, it goes right in your bloodstream through the smoke, like a cigarette does, and goes, you know, it's very easy to overdose if you're not careful. Mm. Well, by burning it in a pipe, too, if you burn it too fast, it doesn't burn properly. If you don't burn it right, then it stays residualized in the pipe, so there's more in there. So the reason I say that is because I had a large quantity of drugs and been, you know, getting high for a couple of days. And one of the things that God gives us as a gift to help us quit our compulsive behaviors, one of them is paranoia or embarrassment. You know, just like someone gambling too much or watching pornography gets embarrassed about it, so they maybe stop doing it. Another thing is also uncomfortability. You know, when a guy loses so much money, he loses his house, it makes him pretty uncomfortable. So those consequences can help people stop doing what they're doing. Well, that was the same way with drug use. You act funny, you act weird, and people don't like being around you. So hopefully it helps you to not want to do it because it's no fun. However, I believe also that there is no light in the drug cocaine or in speed, whereas some people say there's light in marijuana, for instance, where people being creative on that type of drug, you know, et cetera. I believe it opens a pathway for the demonic activity to come in and to be present because there's a lot of things that can happen bad by using it. Mm-hmm. And on a regular basis, I saw shadows, shadowy figures. Some people say the psychosis created by the drug. Some people, like I'm mentioning here, believe that it's actually demonic activity that they're allowed to see because it changes your vibration. We won't get into that. But anyways, it was Christmas Day, and this is how sad it was. It's Christmas Day. I'd been up pretty much all night long making an attempt to get high, but I was afraid my girlfriend or mom would come out of the back bedroom and catch me, so I really wasn't getting a good hit. And morning came, I got showered, and I knocked on the door and wished them a Merry Christmas. Told them I was going to some friend's house and be back for lunch. I called a buddy of mine that was still an engineer. He was a single guy and still had a job, nice house. And I said, you want to get high? And he said, sure, come on over. So I headed over to his house and got there and had a real nice apartment, but it was a condo. Had, you know, zero property line. We shared a wall on each side with somebody else. And he came in through the back door. It was the kitchen, and then the living room opened up, had a real high ceiling because it was a split level. So there was a stairway lining up the back wall of the room and across the top, a trellis kind of pathway, and rooms, bedrooms leading off of it. Beautiful couch, leather couch, glass table, just gorgeous room. And he got high first, so he was feeling comfortable, and then helped me take a nice long draw, lighting the pipe slowly. All the unused cocaine that was still in there from 2 days worth of not doing it properly or whatever, along with what I put in it, started burning, and I inhaled a lot more than I had planned on. And plus, my body was saturated. And as I was finishing inhaling, all of a sudden, these dark cloaked figures, clearer than I'd ever seen them before, started lining the whole stairwell and across the top and around the room. And as I stood up to tell him, there they are, look, I passed out.
Okay.
Well, I went, all of a sudden, I felt my body accelerating. I started soaring upward, jogging left and right with just tremendous speed. And all of a sudden, it was like whoosh, and I was slowly floating. And I couldn't really focus, and before my eyes, kind of a white, light blue wispiness, and I heard this beautiful singing. These beautiful operas of angelic voices just singing. Then I began to focus, and I looked before me, and there was these like rows upon rows upon rows upon rows, as far high and as far wide as you could see of these beautiful, tall, angelic figures. And I was just floating upward through them, and the brilliant day, I felt more at peace than I had in years. It was so beautiful. And I was floating upwards, and all of a sudden, I hear this guttural barking, this old language, and I felt something pulling at my feet. The next thing I know, it's like, I was coughing and choking, and I was standing up, and I finally focused, and my buddy was standing there cussing me out and staring at me and telling me to get the F out. I said, what's going on? And I looked around. He said, you trashed my place. You died, and I was giving him mouth to mouth. He said, get out of here. He's telling me to get out of here. I looked around. There was blood everywhere.
Wow.
I don't know if it was when I was fighting to get away from what was grabbing my feet or just coming out of, you know, my heart stopping and just freaking out. I don't know, but I bumped against the wall, and I had fallen through the table, the glass table, and cut my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I busted his glass, his windshield, or his window in his living room. Nice blinds were tore up, and there was blood everywhere, all the carpet and everything. I took my bandana and wrapped my arm up, and told me he was going to call the police if I didn't get out there, and so I left. My heart was out of rhythm for, you know, a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
Scared. That was my first, what I call it, first step, seeing heaven.
Okay.
Well, anyways, if you got any questions on that, I'm going to fast forward.
Yeah, I'm going to let you just keep going, because then I think we'll just ask questions at the end, because I want everyone to be able to get as most out of what you have to say as possible.
Okay, beautiful.
And we'll take the Q&A.
So, of course, anytime anybody has something going on in their life and starts going bad, consequences occur, so people make changes. That's what creates change, is consequence usually. Someone losing their job and they get their act together and act better at the next job so they don't get fired, or with a relationship and they're mean to someone's kids and the next person has kids and they're not mean to their kids, or whatever they do, they have consequences and they make change. Well, same thing with this addictive roller coaster that occurs. So, you know, I got a job, got my act together, certainly didn't want to die again, so I quit using, you know, cocaine for a while, and, you know, just like always, I didn't talk about my problems, and I just went on, and the brain's a big computer, so, you know, we react the same way every time to past events and create our new events, because that's what we're used to doing. So just like training from college and training from business, you know, you have a good work week, and you go to the bar to have some drinks. Or, you know, you're mad at your boss, but you go to the bar to have some drinks. You know, that whole social thing with, you know, drinking. So, yeah, sure, start drinking again, and then inhibitions get lowered, and next thing you know, someone offers someone a joint, and then that starts, and that's how the whole cycle would start again for me. So things went up and down, and there's a whole bunch of stories in the book of what happened between now and then, so I'm not going to get into all those. However, I want to fast forward to about 8 years later, 9 years later. So I had met this beautiful woman, Christian gal, that I met in Springfield, Missouri, my town, and was doing really well in the car business there, in the automobile business, and started selling cars, my store's breaking records. They wanted to move me to a bigger store. So we ended up moving out here to Phoenix. That's where we're at now. And I hadn't been using for quite a while. I've been drinking a little bit. However, the store I moved to out here, I was working 110 hours a week. I mean, just never doing anything but working. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I was really wore out. And one of the finance guys asked me if I wanted some kryptonite. I didn't know what he meant. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Some speed, methamphetamine." Well, I'd never really done a lot of that before. And I said, sure. Well, sure enough, I got me some extra energy. Next thing I know, I started using that, started getting tired, and performance dropped, and I lost my good job. And the whole cycle started again, you know. Get a job for a while, get clean and sober, you know, start using again, da-da-da-da-da. So anyways, one thing led to another, and I was kind of basically unemployable. I was just partying all the time. So my wife had been at work all day, and I'd been hanging around the house and having large quantity of drugs. And same thing, I was paranoid she's going to come home. So, you know, it wasn't working right. I started getting saturated with unburned, you know, cocaine. And the minute she got home again, I said some excuse, and I left. So I wanted to find some place where I could get high safely. Mm-hmm. So I found this guy and gal I knew riding their bicycles and went over there to the house. This time it wasn't a nice house. It was a little 600 square foot piece of junk house in a bad part of town. That's kind of how the cycle goes. Get there, place is cluttered, and floor to ceiling. Two little back rooms in the back bedrooms. One had the back door was open partially because someone had broken in. And so it made me a little nervous, but the room was stacked floor to ceiling with junk. You know, just a really gross little house. However, my wife went there, so I wasn't concerned she was going to catch me. And so, what a silly, sad, I hate discussing the story because it's just so sickening. I've been clean sober 15 years, but it was just part of the deal. But anyway, so I get them high first, and then same thing again. They help me light the pipe properly, so all this unburned drugs are in there, and they start smoking heavily, and I'm taking a big draw, and bloodstream saturated from a couple days of using. And the same thing happens again, this time in the doorways, opening of the doorways to the back rooms, like from bottom to top, like someone looking around the corner, these black cloaked figures start stacking up, and then they stack up all around the room, and I believe they're the demons waiting to take a sinning soul away as we, you know, die. I don't know, it's just something I feel in my heart. And as I stood up to say, "There they are," again, I blacked out. Well, this time I didn't accelerate upward. I accelerated very hard downward, just a quick, fast downward, and zigzag left and right, right and left. And all of a sudden, I hear this rumbling noise, this deep rumbling noise, like this big furnace. And I kind of see a blackness and kind of dark red as I'm trying to focus. And then I look before me, way in the distance, I see these mountains and this, like, lava burning. And I'm looking down at the base of it, and I see millions of people and these black, kind of black shadow figures, people, not like the little ones, but just people. And they're like a big river flowing, and it looks like they're flowing, just cracking this whip. There's this huge demonic figure over all this giant mountain to the left. It's like barking commands, and I hear the same voice that I heard when I left heaven, like the things that were trying to grab at me, this old language, an old, like a cement, old language, I don't know how to describe it, or Arabic or Middle Eastern or something like that. And all of a sudden I heard this and felt shoop, 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 and I was wrapped in chains. And then I felt a searing pain in my lower midsection, and I looked down and I was being castrated. I was like, I was just in this terrible feeling of hopelessness came over me. I couldn't breathe. The air was without oxygen. I smelled this terrible sulfur, black, burning, just a smell that undescribable, the burning part of it. But it would be flesh or like an old building that had been burned out or something. It was suffocating. And with all this was going on, and, you know, getting my masculinity taken away from me made sense. Because when you're a beautiful woman, Sabrina, Dave, you're a man, that's our identity.
Thank you.
Our basic identity is our masculinity, our femininity. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense to me now, I think about that they took that away from me right then, right there, so I had nothing. I was nothing. And then I heard this whirling noise and coming in and out of me, and I looked before me, and there was this huge, bulbous head of this creature. One big giant eye, one small eye, and it bumps all over its head, and it had teeth like a horse. It was kind of crooked, and it had one wing, one little wing, and it was kind of like a spine thing coming out of its back, like it really didn't have a body. And it was coming at me fast and biting at my right shoulder. And I noticed there was a bunch of other ones like it. They were kind of coming in trying to bite my shoulder, too, and it was kind of fighting them off. And there was another one back behind it. Y'all can read the book to see about it, but there's a couple different ones, and they were... This one was coming down through my lower section of my body, biting at me. And I could only think that this main one that was in front of me was trying to fight these other ones off, because I don't know why I felt it, but I felt like they were pulling for parts, they were competing for parts of my body to replace theirs. Because they didn't have them. I don't know, it was just a feeling I had. Well, what's going on? I get kind of emotional sometimes when I talk about this.
Yeah, I bet.
I was so much out of breath, I couldn't breathe, this terrible torment was going on, and all this, it was just this feeling of hopelessness, and I was catching my breath and talking, and all of a sudden I just started praying, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." And I catch my breath again and continue, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And I catch my breath again, "Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us." And again, just can't breathe, and just all this pain happening all over my body. I'm feeling these things going on. "Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil." And whoosh, when I said "deliver us from evil," all of a sudden, I was choking and coughing again. And I was laying underneath this table. Most of my body was, and my head was sticking out my shoulders. And this guy was kind of on top of me. Well, this guy... he said he was giving me mouth-to-mouth. However, he had been stealing my stuff prior to that because I couldn't find it anywhere. And I think he realized that maybe I was dead and he needed to do something about it. Well, there's a lot of people that can say, you know, psychologists and people that can say that, you know, when people have near-death experiences, that it's just a firing off of electrical synapses in the mind. You know, events are being played over that you've either learned, seen, thought about, etc. And, you know, the bottom line is when people haven't experienced something that you've experienced, and I want the audience to understand this, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have had a supernatural, paranormal, or whatever you want to call it, type experience, or you've made an attempt to tell somebody about it, and they said, "You're crazy, that's nuts, you're just tired. You know, you had too much stress, that's why you saw this thing or felt this thing, or they're fooling you, or whatever, they made it happen." Well, I want you to know that it's a human nature for everyone to be right. Okay? So when people don't understand what you're talking about and haven't experienced, if you tell them and they want to argue about it, don't. Don't argue about it. It's ridiculous to argue about it and senseless, because they're going to be right.
Right.
And someone hasn't experienced, they're not going to believe it until they have other data, and it probably won't be able to be supplied by you. They'll have to get it from someone else because you're too close to them.
Right.
So, you know, these psychiatrists and everybody else, they don't want to believe that there's heaven and hell. That would change their whole practice and everything they've been doing for all their lives. So they say this. However, in this event, I had some physical manifestations of this hell experience that happened, that I took with me after the event happened. Mm-hmm. The first thing was, when I went to my house, had to go home and fix my wife now after I'd just been to hell, okay? I was not looking forward to that. That was kind of worse than what I'd just been through, I was afraid. However, I walked in the front door, and I was white as a ghost and looked terrible. And she looked at me just appalled and said, "What's that smell?" And after she could tell the story, the smell of the sulfur and the burning, I could not get out of my nostrils for 2 or 3 weeks. I tried Air Landy's saline solution 2 or 3 times a day, sticking it up my nose, all sorts of different things, antihistamines. There, my food tasted like charcoal and sulfur for a week. When I would breathe, I'd wake up in the middle of the night coughing. It was terrible. She smelled that sulfur, that terrible smell on me. The other thing was, I had bite marks on my right shoulder, big bite marks, and my right kneecap, and my whole midsection was just bruised. I couldn't see bite marks, but deep bruises. It looked like someone had been kicking or punching me. And I met a guy at the Phenomenology that we were talking about the first of the show. His name is Jason McFloyd. He's an author of Under Siege.
Yeah,
he describes, I don't know a whole lot about all this, you know, paranormal stuff and the psychic stuff. However, I just read his book. And he talks about psychic wounds, you know, like stigmata and things like that. And I guess it's not uncommon when people have demonic situations happen to them or whatever for them to, you know, get bitten by something and have a tooth from a million years old or something stay behind, or, you know, pain and wounds on them. So, anyways, God obviously had a reason for me to still be here. The second time I died, I saw hell, and I made it back to tell you guys about it today. So, that's the heaven and hell experience, 10 years apart.
You know, the that's why one of the reasons I think it really struck me, because all of us here, we deal with mostly demonic cases, and a lot of the stuff that you talk about, like the wounds you were just talking about, it's something we have experienced ourselves or see it on a regular basis with the people where you're trying to help. Mm-hmm. And it's your whole story gives that, you know, makes that real. But I like where you say that you can't relay that to someone and make them understand unless they've experienced themselves. And when people come to us and say, like, "Well, I don't believe that, because I've never experienced it," I always tell them, "I hope you never do." You know, it's not something you don't want them to experience. But your whole, I mean, the fact that you go out and you tell this whole story, which, you know, gives, you know, basically an unflattering view of yourself, you know, years before, how it led up to everything. And the whole concept is to give everyone hope, to show that, you know, even in the worst situations, you can come out on top. You know, through faith and everything else. That's to continue to do that all the time, you know, and open yourself up like that. That's incredible. I mean, that's what really struck me. Out of all the people I've seen talk and all the, you know, the different books I've read, that really I don't know, really hit home with, I think, all of us more than usual.
Definitely.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, it might keep you from getting a few jobs here and there. That's why I don't need to work there anyway. They wouldn't believe anything I had to say anyway.
But it definitely, it's definitely like an inspiration. That's why, I mean, it fit nicely into like the paranormal realm, because I think a lot of those people need to hear that too. Because you get a lot of people who dabble and do stuff that they shouldn't be doing. You know, experiment, not just, you know, it doesn't have to be drugs, just experimenting with, you know, different things they don't understand. I don't want to pick on the Ouija board, but like, because Bob Murch, Ouija boards can be, they're just a game, but if they're intentionally misused, or anything's intentionally done for a bad purpose, you know, there can be consequences. And your book puts them in, and the way you tell it is when you listen to you, it's much better than the book, because it's like you really add that emphasis to it. Yeah, you really feel the whole thing. Yeah, it's like you're there when you're telling the story, and the details that you put in both the book and when you tell, you are feeling everything that you're feeling, And it's a very, compelling the way you told the story and make everyone feel like they're experiencing the same thing you are. So by the time they're done, they understand it completely. I don't think there's anyone I'd be surprised, to be honest with you. I'd like to talk to the people that like read your book or listen to you talk and then question whether it was, psychosomatic or some other, hallucination of, the near-death experience, because it's too vivid of a dream, if it's a dream, and then having it repeat itself and having your wife smell the sulfur and all that stuff. There's too many factors in there.
Yes. It's too real to pose off. I mean, that's why I had to write a book about it, I spent my own money to do it, and no one else did it, but I just needed to help people need to have hope, and they need to talk to their kids, That's the bottom line. And I don't know if we have another 5 or 10 minutes, but I'd like to share something else with you if we have time.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I also know there's another thing that happens in people's lives that just destroys and makes them wander for years, and that's suicide. I don't know if anybody's had suicide occur in their life.
Mm-hmm.
By a family member or friend or what have you, but you would think that I got clean and sober immediately after I went to hell. However, I didn't. The consequence of that sure scared me straight. 4 or 5 months worth, and then I started feeling strong again. I had the ability to make a lot of money fast with, being in the sales industry, and I ended up getting in a little bit of trouble. And they had a program to try and work through that, to not be in trouble anymore, and did good. Of course, consequences, got clean, sober, did good, then relapsed again. The whole cycle started again. Ended up getting really bad one night. My wife called the police and the ambulance to come get me, and ended up in the hospital. By the end of the day, I checked myself out that morning, went to the drug dealer's house, and I get home, and I got drugs again, and I'm going, what am I doing? How is this happening? Then all of a sudden, in my right side of my vision, and this is in the book too, and I have a copy of this. It's a suicide letter that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy the book, for the audience out there, don't try and read the suicide letter. It's all scribbly. But I wrote it out what it says and next to it, so I don't waste any time trying to read it. But this huge white angel, big as the room, appeared in my right shoulder area. I never could look directly face on him. I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I see it, and he says, it's okay to kill yourself. So did you know that when you kill yourself, you become an angel?
Mm-hmm.
And as an angel, you'll be able to sit on the shoulder of your loved ones and be right there when they ask for you by name. You'll be able to help them grant anything they want. All they have to do is ask for whatever they want in your name, and you can help them get it. So you just go ahead and kill yourself. That sounds great. And so I have to write a letter, though. So I wrote a suicide note apologizing for everything I'd done and putting them through, and I proceeded to tell them how to call upon my name and ask for anything they wanted, and to be sure and share it with my kids and everybody else so they would know they have the power to do that since I'm dead now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something in the suicide letter that proves it was a demon disguised as light that was telling me to do this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because I've talked about religion, because it mentioned something in there you'll have to look at. I'm not Catholic, and it said something in there that was totally wrong. So anyways, I turned out the air conditioner, unplugged the fan in the bathroom, in the back bedroom where there are no windows, got a couple of lighters, the lighters wouldn't light, then the clicker on the lighter melted off, I stomped out mad, got some matches, put the matches in, the little hope book of matches, it started melting again. And I'm not going to tell you what happened then, but an angel saved my life. You guys will have to get the book and read it.
I think it said no, right? Because I'm on the book. I'm on the book now. I'm reading the book now. I'm at the
point. I won't tell you then. That'll spoil it.
I'm at your suicide notes, actually. That's where I stopped off at.
That was what I was going to ask you about, too, because we get that all the time with people not realizing that the demonic can appear as anything they want. And they're not going to appear as the boogeyman or with horns and a tail and a cape. They're going to appear as something that you're going to trust, an angel, a loved one, anything like that, to gain your trust and they're going to manipulate you. They know your weaknesses. They know exactly what you want to hear. And that's what, you know, this one is a, again, there's so many lessons in your book throughout, you know, and this is not just another one on top of that about, you know, don't be fooled. You know, don't, you know, listen, you know, and listen with caution sometimes.
You know, and, you know, everybody wonders, you know, when someone commits suicide, how could they do that to us? How could they do that to themselves? Well, they didn't.
Right.
You know, their weaknesses was drawn upon by demonic activity, and they were convinced to do it. Because the demons love to destroy God's creation. Man, it's the most beautiful creation in the world. And when they do that, they laugh at God's face. And so that's why they'll do anything to make it happen. So all of you out there listening, understand it wasn't your fault. And it probably wasn't the person that did it's fault.
And that's word for word, literally, of what we tell the people that we help. They're in the similar situations where they're thinking that, or they have a loved one. Yeah, it's exactly what I tell them. Because unfortunately, in the 28 years I've been doing this, we actually did have one of our clients kill himself. But he wasn't being completely honest until we found, you know, afterwards we found out everything that he was talking to something in the house that pretty much convinced him to do it because it would be better for his family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did complete the act, but then when his wife moved back into the house maybe like a year later, and 2 years later she found someone else and she was, you know, moving on and everything, and then she started seeing the black shapes in the house, and she started feeling compelled to kill herself, and she was resisting at first. So all of a sudden, two people who never did drugs before were out, you know, on the street buying cocaine, and they would become power users within a month. So we had, you know, that's where we became involved, because they realized they were not in their normal pattern, and something was pushing them. If it couldn't get them to kill themselves, it would get them to do something else that would kill them by ODing. Mm-hmm. So all this, everything you say really happens on a daily basis, and a lot of the people out there who deal with the paranormal, they don't understand that this stuff is real. Mm-hmm. They don't understand there are consequences. There are real things out there that are trying to do this and manipulate. And that's why it was perfect for like phenomenology and the conferences for that, because that part really should hit home with a lot of the investigators that don't believe that stuff and say, well, maybe, you know, be a little more open-minded, you know, be open to that possibility, at least that could be happening. That's amazing that's literally the speech that I give, because like Sabrina and Scott are sitting here and they're like nodding too. It's like literally the words I say exactly to the people.
And like, really? That's you made my day. I feel so good right now.
You know what? Too bad we can't play because it's radio. We can't play the dog in boots.
That was hysterical.
Well, that dog in boots, the end of it, you know, we had a lot of technical difficulties with that originally, of course, but I have some YouTube videos out there right now, so maybe I have a website too, GradyMosley.com, and they're getting put on there also, but I've got some YouTube videos of me talking about the heaven experience, talking about the hell experience, talking about the seatbelt. And the initial part talking about change and resistance, it shows the dogs in boots.
All right, then you guys have to check out his website then, because the resistance part was another good. You know, yeah, that's how you started off with that.
Yeah.
But it was like lesson after lesson after lesson. And, I mean, you got started a little late too. So you were a little hurried in your presentation. Mm-hmm. But there was so much. And I think I came up to you afterwards. There was one part where I actually got blocked out. I couldn't hear you. I couldn't really hear anything. And Scott was sitting next to me. He like elbowed me for about, like you said, about 5 minutes. I had zoned out. It's right when you the first time you died. And as soon as you said you were getting like pulled down, I just like zoned out I could not connect. It's like something didn't want me to hear
them.
Something didn't want me to hear what you had to say at that moment. And it was very, very weird. But I mean, I checked back in thanks to Scott elbowing me, and like, but I mean, you never know. That one little, I mean, that's why I got the book right away after you spoke, because I'm like, okay, I got to get the rest of the message that I didn't hear this time, because there's something obviously that something out there didn't want me to hear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be one word, one sentence, but it's like, because you give a very inspirational presentation on so many levels. It's amazing.
It wasn't even your presentation. Day that we got there, the first day
that's right
at Phenomenology, we're standing outside And here you come walking out the door with this bright smile and like this bubbly personality. I'm like, this guy looks like a lot of fun.
See, now I see people, when people have negative stuff around them, I see a darkness around them. But few people I see, you know, I see light around. And I usually will tell them that too. They're usually people that will wind up going to be doing stuff, especially with the negative stuff. You, when you walked, I was sitting inside on the couch, right, when you walked into the hotel room or into the lobby of the hotel. And your light around you was blinding.
Yeah, it was. It was like when you, I went to the table.
Like, yeah.
It
See,
was.
Like you had like a mini star behind you, like, wow. Like a giant spotlight. That it was.
Do you walk with your own spotlight? I mean,
it was even hard to look at you right away because, you know, I had to do like a double take because it was so blinding at first. Yeah. And I, right away, I'm like, "Who's that guy?
Yeah.
Who is he?" Because you had that much like
energy.
And yeah, positive energy, mm-hmm. and probably like a lot of, you know, angels and things behind you, yeah. coming in the door with you.
I don't know who I was standing with at the time or who you were approaching to go see, but it's as soon as you came into the circle, it was like it was so calm and relaxing.
I think that's what helps you give the message too, mm-hmm. because the way you present it definitely puts everybody at ease, mm-hmm. and even the I guess the harder parts to listen to are easy because, you know, the way, I guess it's the energy that's coming through there. Even the whole room was just mm-hmm. really, I don't want to say electrified. It wasn't electric. It was very warm and friendly,
yeah. mm-hmm.
with
yeah.
everybody in there. It was a very comforting feeling.
The whole phenomenology experience was great.
Yes.
It was great. Yeah. I loved it. My first conference ever, the only one, and I was so welcomed and so surprised that it's changed my life. It really has.
Now, do you plan on doing more?
I want to.
Because I think just the people that were at Phenomenology, and everyone that heard you, and you know, Dana and Chris, mm-hmm. you know, you would get, you know, glowing references,
yeah.
literally, from everybody. If you ever need them to, you know, try to get in some places, because I think more people need to hear what you have to say.
Definitely.
Well, I really appreciate your support and having me on your show, and I'm glad that you were able to see the light and understand why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
To share the message of hope, you know, the bottom line with everybody, you know, out there, and I just want this message to be known. Talk with your kids. They'll figure out how to fill their void with something else if we don't do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is, even good kids experiment. They're smart, you know, and that experimentation that one time, whether it be enough to get them addicted or whether it be the wrong drug laced with the wrong thing, could kill them.
Yes.
And if somebody's having trouble in your household with any type of compulsive disorder or a friend that has a problem with someone, you know, gambling or sex addiction or drugs, alcohol, whatever, don't give up on them. Now, I'm not saying enable them. You know, cut them off completely. Send them out. But be a listening ear. Tell them you love them. Keep suggesting things to help. But never give up on them. And for the addict still suffering, never, ever give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to commit suicide. It gets desperate. It gets desperate. It gets desperate. But it only ends when you stop trying.
Right.
And that's the,
right.
That's the, everything in life.
I think that...
The thing that I want people to know, too, is if you're getting frustrated because you're making an attempt to change something, resistance is necessary for change. So instead of getting mad about it, if we can turn that frustration into embracing and rejoicing when the muscles are hurting from working out a new work routine, or when it hurts when you're going to give that check to the poor kids fund to tithe because you want to start tithing or whatever it is, just jump back and say hallelujah and start rejoicing and embrace that resistance because it's necessary for change.
And the point you made there too about the filling the void, that's something that we teach everyone too after we're done, you know, trying to help them with a case. If we can get the negativity, whatever it may be, whether it's a spirit or just something that they've got involved in, if we can get that negativity or that habit out of their lives, they need to fill that void right away. Otherwise, they will fall right back into the same pattern again,
yeah.
no matter what it is, even if it's something that's demonic. If you get it to leave, but they don't fill the space with love or anything at all, you still have it still has a home right there, and it's going to come right back in.
I know that's true.
That was it. Was great talking to you, Grady. I hope we run into each other again on some other conferences.
I look forward to it, actually.
Me too.
If you want to give out your addresses and everything, so everyone can get a copy of the book and check out those videos too.
That sounds great. Absolutely. My website's a work in progress, but you can buy books on it now and see my videos very soon from YouTube. It's Grady Mosby, 10 letters, G-R-A-D, as in dog, Y, M-O-S-B-Y. And I'm also, I'd love for everybody to like me as a friend on Facebook. I'll click and put you in so you can see the next stuff I'm doing and such. And you can also, of course, get books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, iTunes, Google, all that kind of good stuff.
You've got some great reviews on Amazon. I was reading those earlier.
Yeah, this is this book has been, ever since I got it, it's been sitting on my desk. Where I work at home, I haven't moved it. It's been sitting there the whole time. Pretty much when I get books, I buy a lot of books all the time. They go right on the bookshelf. I have the bookshelf of the unread books and the books that I halfway through and everything. That yours has stayed there since Phenomenology and been sitting there the whole time. Because I flip open to the front of it because you wrote Never Give Up. Mm-hmm. And a couple times I've had to open it up to that just
for
to get
purpose.
That. Yeah, just to get that little, okay, Never Give Up, you know, because... Yeah. Each time it could mean something different. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you for helping people, you guys. Thank you for helping people that, you know, are really in a bad situation, too. That's even stronger than you'll ever realize. There's a special place in heaven for people like y'all.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, hopefully we see you there.
Yes.
You will. Hopefully not for about 45 years.
Exactly. All right, Grady. Thanks for coming on, and talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks for having me. See you guys. Have a great weekend.
You do the same.
Thank you.
All right, Scott, who do we have coming up? Who's our next guest?
Our next guest, we are scheduling Andrea.
Okay.
Barone. We are, because of conference season in June, is a little backed up. We're trying to get some dates scheduled, and she's working around our schedule. And so hopefully we'll have her in 2 weeks.
I know the store and South Jersey Ghost Research, Sanctuary Paranormal, me and Marty, everybody's going to be at, you won't be at Para Unity. Para Unity is one of the, it's going to be, looks like one of the largest ones in New Jersey yet, mm-hmm. A very big event. It's going to be a one-day event on next Saturday, May 31st, mm-hmm. But also Bizarre AC in Atlantic City, which is an event we have. Marty will be down there with me. You guys might be stopping down to who's coming down.
I'll probably be down there.
I'll
one
probably
day.
Be there as well.
But it's like
Saturday, probably.
But I'll be down there with a booth for the show, and we'll be for the show, the group, and for the store, pretty much combining everything. But we'll be there all weekend, so stop down there. That should be a pretty interesting thing. It's my first like horror / paranormal convention, so. Marty will have to introduce me or point out what movies these people are from, which horror movies. So,
this is Corey Feldman.
I think he is supposed to be. Isn't somebody from the Lost Boys supposed to be there?
All of the Lost Boys are supposed to be there.
Yeah, Kiefer's still with 24. Yeah. So it's like
they had a picture of five of them.
Yeah.
So
because if Jack Bauer was going to be there, I would have already known about.
He's the secret guest.
That would be a but I've looked at, I recognize the movies. It's just like, you know, there's so many horror movies. It reminded me of like the old VHS collection I had of horror movies. So
I think
so,
it'll be very interesting.
And there's fishing nearby because we're at the shore, so right. It can't get any better. So if you like fishing and horror and paranormal, I know Chip Coffee is going to be on one side of us.
Yes.
And Steve and Dave from Taps and Ghost Hunter Show are going to be on the other side of us. So we're going to be sandwiched in the middle between that, and we'll have a little paranormal, I guess, like 30-foot section there, because they're 10x10 booths, so it should be really cool. I think that's it, right? We don't have who else we have coming on.
We have
future
Rosemary
Guiley, right?
At the end of the month.
So we're lining up more and more guests. You know, I got the old computer to work, so now we have a backup. So apparently, we can do the show more often then, since Dave doesn't remember to bring his computer every time. Yeah, so. All right, everybody. Until next week.
Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend and have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
And remember why we have Memorial Day. It's to remember those that have given the last full measure for this country. Yep. Until next week, take care.